Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Sunday night. Excited to talk to you for the next hour or so as we discuss the latest in boxing. Well, it involved a mixed martial artist, so kind of MMA. Plus, we'll have some MMA news, some of the latest stuff coming out of the Miocic camp, the Chimaev camp, the McGregor camp. Shout out to Mike Bond, by the way, who not only went to UFC 294 in Abu Dhabi, he stuck around and went to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And so he had a lot of great coverage there for our website at the Fury versus Ngannou fight, which is pretty much going to be the bulk of this show, folks, as we go over it. And special guest Eric Nixick, who was in the corner of Francis Ngannou this past weekend. All right, we'll be right back to start the show. Ghost is fighting through a headache, so you might not hear too much from him, except for it's the lead, Ghost, the big fight between Tyson Fury versus Francis Ngannou. I can ramble on forever. I got a lot of thoughts on it, but let's hear from you first. What did you think of the fight? Are you on board with this whole Francis won, Francis got robbed? You know, where do you sit with all that? What do you think Francis's next move should be if it was up to him? Meaning, I know he's got some PFL stuff lined up, some MMA stuff lined up, but before we hear from Eric, I want to hear all that from you. Go ahead and unpack.
I thought the fight was very close. I thought he landed more damaging punches. He knocked down Tyson Fury. If this were Pride, I think he would have got a win. But I understand why they would go in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of okay with the score. I personally thought Francis might have done enough. But you have to understand that for Tyson Fury to be successful in this fight, he needed a knockout. He needed a stoppage. If Tyson Fury fought Francis Ngannou in mixed martial arts, there's no way that goes five rounds. It doesn't go.
Hell no. I agree.
It would be a miracle if it made it out of round one. So you have to understand, being a boxing purist, if you're a big boxing fan, you should have been pulling your hair out at the fact that this fight went the distance, let alone a split decision. And to have your guy knocked down was not good. It was not a good look for boxing that night. So I thought Francis did, outside of just winning the fight, he did just about everything right. And as far as what he should do next, I think that should be a wrap on boxing if he does do
really?
It. Yeah, because look, at the end of the day, man, I thought Francis did a lot of great things. I think obviously Tyson Fury probably didn't come in shape the way he normally would, but I don't think that's one of the reasons that fight went that way. I think tactically he was a little confused. But if you're Francis Ngannou, I think you go back to your bread and butter for a while. I'm not saying never go back to boxing, but I think it's something.
37, though.
Yeah, but I mean, do like a year, maybe a little more of MMA. And then maybe go back and fight somebody in boxing.
Okay. I guess I can go one of two ways with this. It probably would be pretty cool if his only fight was that one and he looks so great and he can just say, okay, I'm 0-1, you got me, but look at what I did. And he made a lot of money and then he just goes back to being a badass in MMA. That's one way to look at it. Because you're right. Part of me did think that Fury underestimated him, said he was in a 12-week camp post-fight, and who am I to not believe him? He also said he felt rusty because he hadn't fought in a year. But I think most of it had to do with probably underestimating Francis Ngannou. And so, you know, there were times during the fight when Fury would get off. And I wouldn't say it looked like he was taking him to school, but you could just tell he looked good, you know. And he could look way better than Francis if he just kind of stuck to the basics. At the same time, every time I've doubted Francis Ngannou, like going into the Gone fight with that knee injury, you know, going into this boxing match here, I think for a while I was jaded in, as to how he gassed so bad against Stephen Miocic. I just thought this guy can't do it. And he really does seem to perform well. You know, his wrestling, man, can look pretty good at times too, where you're like, damn, like he's cat-like it. You know, for a guy that's 6'4", all of 250, 260, whatever he weighs in at, I mean, he's just a physical specimen. But yeah, you're right. I do wonder if how it would go against Wilder, how it would go against Anthony Joshua, Joseph Parker, you know, some of the other top guys, Usyk, that are out there. Could he replicate it? If he looks like crap, would everyone go, ah, it was just an anomaly fight. Fury didn't take him serious. But then the other part of me is like, well, you know, obviously, I don't think people are just talking out of their ass. I'm hearing a lot of boxers saying, hey, this guy impressed. And so now if he applies himself and does another, you know, 6 months of training followed by a 2 month camp to get in shape, what could he possibly do? And all the while making a ton of money. Now, remember, goes, I'm not here to put anyone down or whatever, but this is the truth. Him walking out to PFL is not going to feel anything like what he was used to at the UFC, and definitely not what we saw on Saturday. That was pretty damn, it was worth the wait. It kind of sucked, you know, waiting an hour in between fights, but it was pretty impressive. The glitz and the glamour, you know, and the production, and he's not going to get that at PFL. At least I don't think he is. Although I heard PFL is going to Saudi Arabia, so who knows? Maybe they bring Big Fran back. So, you know,
can I add something?
I guess I do want to see him at least go to PFL and get that title, but I don't want to see him do a whole season. I just don't think he needs to. Mm-hmm. And he already proved to me that he seems to be a pretty damn good boxer, you know, and I don't know. I think I'm anxious to see more of it.
Let me explain my side of it a little better. I feel like if he were to just stop what he's doing, take another boxing match, look, man, the chances are more than likely it's going to be high level, and he's probably going to lose, okay? Not impossible. He could win, but more than likely, let's just keep it real. So now you're an 0-2 guy, an 0-2 boxer. Why not go to MMA and build the legend a little bit? You know, while all this is going on, people are going to be talking about him for a while in the world, in the boxing world. And it's going to make a lot of those guys at the top have fought each other. So it's going to make people want something fresh. And I think if he can rack up 2, maybe 3 wins, which you can do in a year in mixed martial arts, you continue to build that legend of being the baddest man on the planet. And now it's boxing that's luring you back into their game, as opposed to early on, it was kind of like, it felt like boxing was doing him a favor, right? Giving him money that that maybe he couldn't have done on his own, right? If that was Francis Ngannou against the number 10 heavyweight in the world, not a lot of people would care. It's the fact that it was Tyson Fury. And we all felt that Tyson Fury was almost doing him a favor. The shoe's on the other foot now. I think he can make it, he could build the legend even more if he gets a couple wins in mixed martial arts. I think people in the boxing world are going to see the value in bringing him back for one more. It's kind of like Apollo Creed in the first Rocky movie. He wanted Rocky Balboa bad, right? Rocky Balboa was a scrub. He came out of nowhere. He could have just forgotten about it, but there was something about that fight. He wanted to get back his respect, and I feel like Tyson Fury is, if he didn't already feel like that on the night of, he's going to feel like that even more. The more and more he hears people like you and I say things like this, he's going to want that respect back, and that respect is going to come with a dollar sign around it, a big one for Francis Ngannou.
You know how you often say that Adam Sandler likes to cherry pick his co-hosts or his co-stars in the movies, the romantic comedies that he does?
Yeah.
They're always hotties.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Francis has been fighting against, we'll say, hotties in that they're big names. The only thing he has left is a trilogy with Stipe Miocic, the John Jones fight, and maybe one of the two young guns, because one of them's going to eliminate the other one in Pavlovich Aspinall. But pretty much other than that, he walloped a lot of guys on the way to the title. He already took out the former gym rival in Ciryl Gane. He smoked some former champions in Junior Dos Santos, Cain Velasquez, even Reem. Reem held the Strikeforce title. So I just don't know that there's much left there to do. And the money just seems to be way better in boxing than in MMA. And again, I don't know that the PFL is going to make him. I mean, unless he, I can't remember what his deal was, but unless he's some sort of a silent partner, you know, wants to help build that and he's getting a piece of the pie, who knows? But I just think after this performance, I didn't think this prior to the fight. But post-fight, I'm thinking it, man. I'm willing to see how it goes. You know, like you said, what if he gets clowned? What if he gets thumped? He's 0-2. Well, what if he doesn't? What if he wins? You know, maybe the mystique grows even more. I mean, I've often said that Henry Cejudo with the gold medal in wrestling, freestyle wrestling, along with his two UFC titles with a title defense in each weight class, to me, is the greatest combat sports athlete ever. But if Francis Ngannou somehow had beaten Tyson Fury, and then they redid it for a rematch, and then also grabbed themselves a PFL belt, man, that might be up there as well. He won't have two divisions in MMA, mm-hmm. But geez, you know, when you're fighting all them monsters, when it's basically an open weight class at that point, and you can grab two major belts, I don't know. I think I'd consider that pretty prestigious as well. But I don't know. Like I say, Jennifer Aniston and Selma Hayek. I can't remember the list of all them hotties that Adam Sandler has, you know, done movies with, and now all of a sudden you're just gonna give him some horrific looking gal, you know, that's not even famous. I just don't know that he's gonna get all excited about that script when you hand it to him.
I think it's just gonna build the legend a little bit more, because I feel like boxing needs him.
You don't think he's already a legend?
Well, yeah, but right now, I think whatever money they offer him for a rematch, I just think mm-hmm. is going to be bigger if he waits a little bit longer and just destroys a couple people in mixed martial arts. Because every press conference going forward, Tyson Fury is going to get asked that question about Francis over and over and over again. And I just feel like he's going to make more money if he can go wipe the floor, mop the floor with a couple PFL fighters, and then fight. I mean, unless people think maybe he might lose in the PFL, I could see that hurting, but I think we're all pretty sure he should be pretty good with whoever they put in front of him. I think those highlights will serve him well, and that fight will still be there.
Let's hope the PFL can come up with a name to give him, because, you know, had Ante D'Elia gone back-to-back, you know, I think Randy Couture told us this too when we interviewed him. Mm-hmm. That'd be pretty impressive, I guess, to say, hey, a two-time PFL champ is here to welcome you. Let's see how that goes. And then I know Fabricio Werdum somehow might still be tied to PFL. He's got a name. He's also 46. Ben Rothwell, who was released from the UFC, maybe he could suffice as well. And now that I think about it too, I'm thinking, why doesn't he just do the tour? I think I'd call Dave Feldman and go, what do you got over there in Bare Knuckle? Let's make a deal, you know, and hopefully PFL lets him wear some PFL attire, go out there, win a belt there. I don't know, Feldman, if it's worth it for him to have a champ that just dips in and dips out. But I don't know. Francis at this point has proven to me he can do anything. I used to say, I bet you he could line up as a defensive end for an NFL team, man. He's just so damn athletic and picks up techniques so quick. But the boxing match itself, I was holding my breath when he was in the southpaw stance. Not because his offense didn't look good. It just looked like his defense was more awkward. And I was scared that that might leave an opening for Tyson Fury, because Tyson Fury has no problem switching stances. He can fight effectively from both. And as far as the fight goes, I thought Ngannou won three rounds that I had no problem scoring for him, and seven for Fury. But one of them was a 10-8. However, there were a couple rounds that were close, and I thought, well, what if I just, you know, I think if the judges are doing it like me, they might give him one of those two, and therefore it might be closer, you know? Mm-hmm. But that basically, if he wins four along with the 10-8, that's the 95-94 score where he loses. He would have needed to win two more, and obviously one of those being the 10-8, to take the 95-94 his way, which is what one of the judges had it. I looked at the judges' scorecards, and let's see if you can follow, because it's really confusing, and it's all over the place. But here's how the judges saw it. In round one, I won't even bother telling you their names or nothing. I guess that's not really important at this point. But round one, two judges had it for Fury, one for Ngannou. I thought that was bizarre. I thought Fury kind of cleanly won that, but all right. In round two goes, two judges had it for Fury and one for Ngannou. Now, it just so happens that the two 10-9s that I mentioned are opposite judges. One judge is consistent with the 10-9s. In round three, there's no question about it, 10-8, Francis Ngannou. That's when he knocked him down. In round four, 10-9, two judges scored it for Tyson Fury and one for Francis Ngannou. That's how close these rounds were that, you know, that's why we got kind of these close scores. Mm-hmm. Where am I at? I think round five was a consistent 10-9 for Fury, and so was six. Okay, it's kind of good to see, I guess, that the judges were on the same playing field. But now we get to 10-7, and once again, two judges have it 10-9 for Fury, one for Francis Ngannou. The one that hadn't been giving Francis Ngannou those 10-9s, by the way. Round eight, all 10-9s for Francis Ngannou. Round nine, and I think this is the key round, goes all 10-9s for Tyson Fury. Round 10, two judges gave it to Ngannou and one to Fury. Round 9 was a little disappointing to me, and I'll tell you why. Francis just wasn't active. He wasn't active, and in my head, I was calling him the championship rounds, even though really I would say 10, 11, and 12 are in boxing traditionally. But, you know, here it was a 10-round fight. That's what they agreed on. Both guys were tired. I thought Ngannou was tiring first. Then it looked like Tyson was starting to really wear down. But I thought in round nine, where like you could just tell this thing's starting to wrap up here, I think that this is about the time where Francis realized, you know what? I can cross that finish line. My calves are going to hold up. My arms are still up. The power's still there. Let's go. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And in that round, he just didn't do much. And if he actually wins that round, goes 10-9, because Tyson Fury didn't offer that much either. But if he actually pulls that round off, he wins the fight. So yeah. It really kind of almost came down to, it did come down to that fight. It did come down to that round. I mean, there's a few other where like it was 2-1, 2-1, 1-2, 2-1, whatever. But this one, I kind of was just one that I remembered. Heck, I thought round 10 might be close, but two judges wound up giving it to him. Two judges gave it to him, one gave it to Fury. But their output was, you know, not the highest on either side. And so it really was tough to gauge Ngannou, who had the bigger bombs, versus Fury, who kind of had more volume. And the jab, you know, there was some rounds that he was really, really effective with the jab. Mm-hmm. And I think that jab might have won Fury that close fight. And that's why I'm not on board with this is a robbery or anything like that. I don't believe that because he had a fight scheduled in December. Folks, let me explain it to you like this, just so you know how ridiculous it is. It's fun to say, okay? But when the judge writes down his score, he immediately gives it to an official. So all these scores that I'm giving it to you, I mean, I suppose they could be keeping a number in their head or whatever. But do you think they really got to the end and said, oh my God, I'm part of the boxing world. I got to screw Francis. I'm going to give him a round that I didn't give him before. No, they're just riding 10 nines. They're just basically going off what they see. And like I said, there wasn't as much going on out there. You know, again, I thought Francis won the fight in the sense that he, A, went the distance with the lineal heavyweight boxing champ, one of the best heavyweights ever, who, by the way, is still undefeated and has a decent KO ratio. So he went the distance and knocked him down and got one score from a judge. If I'm Francis Ngannou, of course, I could sleep comfortably, man. I got paid. I fulfilled a dream, kind of an F you to the UFC. Like, seriously, he ticks so many boxes that it should feel like a win. And had he won, okay, he would have got that one belt. It wasn't the WEC belt. That wasn't up for grabs. You got to go 12 rounds for that. But, you know, I guess the feeling of maybe getting your hand raised, sure, that would have been nice. But, man, that brother won. He won. I'm so proud of him. MMA's proud of him. But, you know, I don't really buy into the whole the judges had it out. I mean,
nah.
Yeah, I don't buy that part.
I don't buy that. And then I think some MMA people need to calm their nerves a little bit. Like I get it if you're Adesanya or Kamaru Usman, that's your boy. But I don't think it was very clear cut in either direction. You know, whoever you give the fight to, it's going to be razor thin. I don't know that a lot of people could sit there and say Francis was robbed or anything like that. Like, it was a close fight, man. It really was.
Yeah. And so I would say this. To be fair, I think he should go to PFL and fight. And I think the fight that makes the most sense is just fight their previous champ, the one that won the 2023 season. Mm-hmm. That's one option. Two, if you want to go for the name, okay, I guess Redoom is out there. That stands out. Or a free agent like Big Ben. But I think he's got kind of his hands all set on trying to get, you know, the BKFC belt. So I don't know. I guess Junior Dos Santos, who just fought Verdum and beat Verdum, you know, he could be the guy as well. But we kind of saw that in the UFC already. And Junior Dos Santos and Verdum kind of clearly proved that they were past their prime. Again, they're a name. Respect to both former champs. But I don't know that those are my first choices. But if somehow the Fury fight presents itself again, I don't know, man. I kind of wouldn't mind seeing it again. They did something pretty special on Saturday.
Yeah, I feel like it has to happen again at some point. I just don't think it needs to happen right away. But I think it will happen eventually.
Yeah.
Here's the thing I will say, though, George. Like, I don't mind if it happens in Saudi Arabia again. That thing was off the hook. The way they put that all together, of course, there are things you could tighten up and make better about it. But the names they got out there, that was a who's who. It was like the Oscars out there, man. Pretty damn amazing. The only thing I could think of, you know, if you're going to do it here in the States, is obviously we have Allegiant Stadium. Now you could fill that bad boy up. But I don't know that would look as special as fuck as what they put on over there.
Or the Sphere.
You know, I'm against the Sphere. This was going to be a spinning backlick topic. Uh-huh. And I don't know that that's a good venue for combat sports. For one, it looks like it would just be incredibly distracting for a fighter. People can only look from one side down. I don't know. But I don't think it's – you know what I think it's phenomenal for? If you want to show UFC pay-per-views there, mm-hmm. go for it. I think that's great. But live events, I don't know that they would look that great there.
I guess to be fair, we need to go to it and see. I've seen a few videos where I agree with you and go, oh, I see. Like, I'm not even sure I'd want to go see a concert. Although everyone says it's dope. Although when you spend a lot of money and you go, if it sucks, you're not going to go, man, it sucked. You kind of want to tell everyone your trip was cool. Mm-hmm. But then I saw an angle today and I was like, whoa, that was pretty cool. It kind of looked like maybe the second or third level looked like it might pop more than just being at the front, like when you're at the movies, I suppose. But again, right, without having been there, I can't really form an opinion. This is where I kind of trust Dana White. I mean, he's a promoter for over 20 years. He seems to have pretty good visions, even though I wish there was a few different production things he would do with the UFC, you know, differently than that I've seen other MMA promotions pull off. But he seems to be like really, really into it. So I kind of trust that he saw something that tells me it would work. I didn't think of the angle of what it would do to the fighter, because he looked like he was talking about Dana White, the fan, and how much he would dig it and probably how much the fans would dig it. But you're right. What would the fighters think about it? And folks, that might sound silly, but there's a lot of basketball players that don't like to play in certain arenas that are kind of like stadiums because of the backdrop. It throws them off. So I've heard things like that before, you know, the sunlight for certain baseball stadiums. There's outfielders that just can't get a good jump off a fly ball, whether they need to go back or go up, or maybe even lose it once it's up in the air, whether it's the lights or lose it in the sun. So backdrops can be important. I'd be interested to ask for us to ask on that question, or someone ask them that question.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you're going to pay all that money to be there, essentially, don't you want to watch with your own eyes? Because why wouldn't you be looking at the screens? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's why you're there. That's what the most impressive part of the whole thing is, to be looking at the screen. So at the end of the day, do you want to fork up all that money to sit there and watch it on TV when they're literally in front of you fighting? Weird, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. We'll have to hit it up soon. I guess YouTube's the only band there for a while, but maybe they do tours or something. Okay, so we have a little bit more MMA news to talk about, but let's get to our guest, Eric Nixick. Eric was in the corner last night in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, cornering Francis Ngannou. He had a coaching role with him. He wasn't necessarily his head coach. Looked like Dewey Cooper was kind of handling that. But him and Dewey both worked with Francis for MMA. Only the roles seemed to be reversed. And, you know, we have to give them their flowers, man. They really, really helped put together a game plan that was, I think, you know, troubled Tyson Fury at times, or at least confused him. So, anyway, let us get this queued up, and we'll be right back. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes are back with another superstar from the sport of mixed martial arts. We get to talk to Extreme Couture head coach and general manager, world championship coach, who also holds the title of 2020 Co-Coach of the Year for the MMA Junkie Awards. Of course, we're talking about Eric Nixick. What's going on, Eric? How are you?
Good, brother. Just riding the wave, man. About to pack up and head home. Excited to go home and hug the wife and see the kids, man. It's been a long month. Been on the road pretty much this entire month. So, but you know, definitely going home on a high.
Right, for sure. We all saw it yesterday. The world, well, maybe not all of the world was in shock, but a lot of the world was in shock. You know, we often say the sweet science is what it is. If you're one of the best in the world at it, it's pretty hard to go into that territory and do well. And if they come into the MMA world, the same thing. They're going to get spanked and sent home. But this was yet another one of those anomalies. And your friend, your guy, Francis Ngannou, just shocked the world. I mean, won on one of the judges' scorecards, won on many unofficial scorecards that were being tossed out in, you know, through Twitter and social media. First of all, what did you think of the performance, and how proud are you of your guy?
Oh, man, blown away, you know, and nothing really surprises me anymore. I think when it comes to Francis and, you know, the level of expectation that he carries, and, you know, we love that the doubt and everything that we're told that we can't do, it does motivate us. And I know it definitely motivates him. And, you know, this is something that he's had, you know, in his mind for such a long time now. And then to, for it to come to fruition, there's a moment in the ring when Tyson was walking in and, you know, I just kind of take it all in, just looking at the event itself, you know, at the scenario. And, you know, Francis looks over at me and just has this big old smile on his face. And I was just like, dude, you did this, man. Like literally like before we fought, I'm like, you did this. This is on you. Like, holy hell. Like I couldn't be more proud of him. And, you know, just his hard work and everything that he's been putting into this and his self-belief is, I think, second to none. So, you know, what an amazing couple of fights that we've had with Gon and him, and now Tyson Fury, and, you know, sky's the limit for him.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, you pointed something out, and maybe I should have started there. For one, there was this huge delay between the last boxing match and yours. There was a lot of production, a mini concert took place out there before this match, and then obviously when they rose the ring, there was a delay in getting things set up there for the VIPs, the commissions, all that. Did that in any way disrupt you guys? I mean, again, you had a great performance, but to me, you know, fighters push through certain things. So was there additional warm-ups or anything that messed you guys up in the back?
Not in the least. You know, it was actually kind of funny because we were all pretty chill and hanging out. And then like when he got wrapped up, you know, I think Dewey did a good job of like kind of pacing everything. And then I went in the other locker room to watch Tyson get wrapped. So I felt like everything, the timing of everything felt pretty good. And then I think the one delay that I remember them coming in, they're like, okay, it's not going to be this time. It's going to be like 15 more minutes or whatever. And that didn't even feel that long, you know? So to us in the back, it was like, oh, come on, hurry up. Let's get going. It just felt smooth, you know, it just felt natural. And nothing really took us out of our progressions as far as like the warm-up goes.
Yeah, because I know that bad boy started after 1 a.m. if I'm not mistaken, but I'm sure you guys planned for it. When you went in that other room, did they say anything to you like what Francis says that Tyson told him before the fight, which was, I'm taking you to school? So as the event got closer to the fight itself, it almost seemed like they started more of the not antics, but I guess not being so friendly. So do you remember either his dad or him saying anything to you as you were observing and, you know, the rap?
No, they're actually quite the opposite. They're all very classy, very friendly. You know, Sugar Hill was very friendly, and even Tyson and I kind of cracked a joke back and forth to one another. And, you know, I thought they were very professional and very accommodating in the situation. And it's part of the sport. You know, it was the first time I've ever gone in the back and watched somebody rap our opponent. So just, it was a different vibe. The locker room was certainly a different energy. And it was cool. I mean, there was a moment there where I was like, oh, this is pretty neat. I'm in Tyson Fury's locker watching him get his hands wrapped. So, but no, they couldn't have been more accommodating and more nice in that scenario.
Okay, another one from me, and then I'll hand it over to Goz. As you're walking, you know, you guys did the whole, he's sitting on the chair, the throne. There's the crown and the robe, and then you guys just walk down that ramp. Describe it to us, man. There was a lot of combat sports, legendary boxers, notables, and the notables from the entertainment. Of course, Cristiano Ronaldo's there. And then all of the most important people in the kingdom of Saudi Arabia. How did you take it in all in? What were you thinking of? Do you remember anything that stood out to you, you know, as you walked down that was just, you know, you had to pinch yourself, I guess, surreal?
Yeah, you know, just try to stay in the moment. Definitely wanted to take it all in because, you know, that was a chance of a lifetime event, you know, and experience for that matter. And, you know, just wanted to be present and, you know, connect and look at some of the faces in the crowd and, you know, feel the music and feel the vibe and feel the environment, but also stay present in the fact that we had a big task at hand, you know, not to get too emotional or anything like that, or, you know, too hyped up. But, you know, when that God's Plan song hits, man, like, it's just something different when you see, you know, Francis walking down and, you know, getting prepared to fight. And the energy was insane, man. They spared no expense. It was an unbelievable production. You know, the cast of fighters that they had out there, past and present, the celebrities. I mean, it was unbelievable. They really outdid themselves, man. Everything from the moment we arrived, you know, I mean, I'm in this beautiful hotel, apartment, whatever, you know, they were so accommodating to everything that we did. So the production, was just, you know, over the top, man. It was so cool to be a part of.
Eric, do you feel like something like that, because you're right, it was phenomenal. I mean, honestly, like when you think about like, I don't know, Ivan Drago and Apollo Creed, they look like a slower compared to what you guys put on out there. Do you think this is going to be like the future of combat sports? Is this like the beginning of what could possibly be? Because we're in the fight capital of the world. At least I am. You guys are all over the world. But I'm in the fight capital of the world right now. Like, I'm used to something like this going down and looking outside my window and knowing it's not that far away. Does this feel like the beginning of something that could maybe start to be bigger out there?
Yeah, I think you nailed it, Goes. And that was the feeling that I got right away when I was out here. Because Randy's out here right now, Couture. And I talked to Randy. I was like, I think we're going to be making a trip out here a lot more, huh? And Randy's like, yeah, dude. Like, I think they're going to be starting to do more and more things. Not only we saw the UFC just sign with them, but obviously with, you know, Riyadh season and the boxing, and now they're getting involved in more MMA. I know PFL plans on coming out here. But, you know, they're building so many different things out here, and they're trying to make it more accommodating. I wouldn't say they're westernizing it, but they're making it a lot more accommodating. And man, it's been a very valuable experience for me. You know, like I love being out here. Everything about this was a pretty cool experience that I think that more and more people are going to be heading their way out here, and they're going to enjoy their time in Saudi Arabia.
Eric, what was unique about the situation was both combatants were wearing boxing gloves. However, one of the biggest impacts that this all had is probably on the guys that wear the little gloves, right? I mean, We go back months, you know, before, and all the things that were being said about whether this should even happen, whether it could be profitable, whether it was the wrong move. How big of an impact with something like this is it going to have on all of the mixed martial artists that were watching at home?
I think it's huge, you know, and I think that it's that, you know, 4 minute mile mentality where, you know, some the guy that breaks the 4 minute mile, though, on the impossible, you know, feat. And then once somebody does, everybody else knows that they have that opportunity to do the same thing. So, you know, I think more and more MMA guys will look for this opportunity as well. That was the first thing I wrote Sean Strickland. Like, you ready to move over to boxing? And he's like, damn right, man. That's all I do is spar boxers anyway. So, I think that Francis kind of paved that way and showed that this is capable. We are capable of competing, and not only competing, but, you know, winning and putting it together at a high level. So, you know, I'm proud of him, man. He kind of laid that groundwork.
How much of what played out in the ring was game plan, and how much of it was adjustment, or just Francis kind of just throwing out the playbook and doing whatever needed to be done? Can you kind of break that down for us?
I think it was a good mix of all of that, to be honest. You know, we sat down in July and just kind of try to figure out the roles and what we're going to do. And, you know, Dewey did an incredible job, right? Like, this was, he did all the heavy lifting. And this was something that initially, like, when Francis wanted to kind of set the roles, it was like, Eric's my MMA guys, but he's going to be in the corner. He's always going to be, you know, part of this. Dewey, you're more my striking guy, but I'm going to hire a boxing coach. And then never really got a boxing coach involved until later on. And then we had John from France came in. But again, like, John was kind of he did a great job, but it was like just another side role, if you will. But Dewey really took the reins and made this what it is. So the game plan, I think, for all of us was, you know, we were under the idea that it wasn't us to go out and box Tyson Fury, but it was like to outfight him and stay erratic and stay unorthodox and do the things that we already do well and within MMA, but clean those things up a little bit, you know. And I think that's why you saw, you know, Francis switching his stances a lot more in this fight. You know, that was something that we talked about quite a bit, and setting things up from different angles and putting our power hand forward and, you know, working the body and then really attacking more when we got him into the corner, like the turnbuckles, just the same way we would do with an MMA. So we weren't trying to really reinvent the wheel, but we're also trying to lean heavy on our athlete and his athleticism. So, you know, I think Dewey did a freaking marvelous job, man. And, you know, just tip my hat to the guy, man. It was a lot of hard work, man. I saw this dude just getting the crap beat out of him all camp, you know, holding pads. And, you know, not only that, he had his whole stable of fighters as well that he was dealing with, and traveling and doing all that. So, really when it boiled down to it, to be honest with you, goes, I think it was a combination of all those things. And there were some adjustments we made mid rounds, simple things. It wasn't too crazy. It was just kind of keeping Francis in line on what was working. And then, where do we add on? And we didn't want rounds to get stolen away, which I feel like that kind of did happen. The one thing I would say, looking back on the unknown, was, the cardio. I think Francis was, you know, oh man, I don't know, I didn't want to get tired. And the more the rounds are going on, I was just watching his belly and getting between rounds. Man, his recovery was unreal. Like our strength and conditioning coach Trip, he did a great job with him. And then like around 7 or 8, I was just like, yo, man, like let's start putting the gas pedal down on this guy. And Francis agreed. He's like, yeah, I don't want to leave anything behind. Like I want to leave this tired, you know. So I think for us just to understand a little bit more how to calibrate our energy as the fight goes on, that will be some of the adjustments that we can make later on in the future. But man, other than that, I think, you know, everything was hitting on all cylinders for us.
Eric, give us a preview, because we're going to discuss this on Spinning Back Click, the show that you've been on with us. And it's unavoidable, because we really wanted to talk to you post-fight. So it'll be nice to get your input. But he looks so great at boxing that we almost want to see him box again. Yeah. Before MMA. No disrespect to the PFL and whatever plans they have there and his plans there. I'm sure he'll do well over there. I would expect him to pretty much, you know, wherever he left off in the UFC, you know, like mopping people up. I think most fans expect the same at PFL. We'll see, right? But, yeah, I mean, when you face the lineal boxing champ and take him to a split decision, you know, you kind of start to think, well, wait a minute here, you know, let's rethink things, I guess. I don't know. What about from your side? Like, if I'm asking, or if he's contemplating it and he just turns to you and says, what do you think? You know, how would you lay out his future?
Yeah, I think we would have to weigh out those options, and do what's right for the scenario. But from my understanding, when I spoke to him, you know, he wants to get back to MMA, and he still loves MMA, and he's still growing in that sport. And there's still so many things I think that we can accomplish, not only as a skill set, but, you know, in the landscape of MMA. So, you know, from my understanding in talking to him, that's the goal, is to get back to MMA, hopefully, you know, first quarter of 2024. And, after that, then it's like, maybe we go back to boxing and then jump back into MMA, do something like that, like a one-off. But man, the sky's the limit now for him. He holds all the cards. He really does. So, you know, they can really come back with a huge number, and, you know, he might box again. I don't know. But from my understanding in speaking with him, and then this was even just recently, you know, definitely wants to get back to MMA and, get back to the wrestling grind and kick in and everything else, man. So it'll be fun to get back to work with him.
Now, I know you weren't his head coach per se in boxing, but you were part of the camp. You were there, right? And of course, we know your role in MMA. What was more fun for you in the experiences of the big fights that you've had with Francis? We'll just isolate on Francis, because obviously Strickland was awesome. Sterling was awesome. All the others you've been with. But just with Francis, can you compare the two, you know, as a coach, just, you know, like the strategy of it all, the task that was ahead, all that?
Yeah, I mean, it's all the same to me in the regards of, like, that's my brother, you know. So no matter where my role's at, my loyalties and my love for him will never change. So, you know, that was the best part about this one for me, was like, I got to learn a lot too. And I got to sit back and watch, you know, Mike Tyson come in and help for those couple practices, but just, you know, he wasn't there a lot, but he was there. And you, you know, you take advantage of that time when a guy like Mike Tyson's around, you know, and then watching John and watching Dewey. And it was just, it was very different because this was like my first full camp involved in boxing, you know? So I got to take away a lot from it, you know, just from a learning perspective. But as far as like the emotions go and, you know, my involvement, man, it's like they all are up there. They're all equal the same to me. And I know we didn't get the win on the scorecard, but we definitely felt like we won the moment and won the night. And I couldn't be more proud of Francis after that, man. It was an amazing experience.
Aside from Mike Tyson, were there any other boxing luminaries that sided with Francis, won the fight, that spoke to you directly or, you know, as a whole to the group?
No, I actually talked to some guys on the side. I talked to Chris Algieri. You know, I've known Chris for a long time and a guy that I just respect immensely. And I wanted to kind of pick his brain from a guy who competed in MMA and kickboxing, but also was a very good boxer in his own right. And just wanted to kind of talk to him about my thoughts on some of the game plan and some of the approach, and just see if I was like out of line, like, hey, what do you think about like some of these stance switch things and this and this, and just really just throw ideas out there because I for one, like I trust the guy and he's going to tell me what he thinks and he's not going to sugarcoat anything or, you know, so that was fun, man. Like it was cool to be able to like really talk with him in those regards. And then, you know, there wasn't really anybody else that came in as far as like the boxing world went. But the one cool thing, man, was Lennox Lewis talked to me when we were at the banquet and he's like, you know, I wanted to be involved and I hope to be involved in the next one. You know, Lennox Lewis to me is like my goat when it comes to the heavyweight division in boxing, you know. So Lennox Lewis to come up and say like, hey, next time I want to be involved, man, I was pretty stoked about that.
Meaning he wants to be part of the camp for Francis's preparations?
Yeah, he just said, I'd like to come in and help. Not like he wants to come in and coach or anything like that. But, you know, he's like, hey, next time, you know, I would definitely love to come in and help you guys out and get some work. And, you know, and I was all for that. So it'd be cool to have Lennox Lewis involved in any capacity, you know, even for if it's sure. for one day.
Yeah. Did you rewatch it and did you score it? How'd you score it? If so, or do you remember how you might have scored it that night?
Yeah, I couldn't get on ESPN Plus out here. I was like, trying to use a VPN and everything else, but we haven't really slept, you know. So we got home and I think I went to bed at like 7 a.m. I slept for a few hours and I've been up all day. So I haven't had the opportunity to watch it yet. And, you know, the whole fight felt like a blur. I'll tell you the one hard thing, man, because I couldn't see the screen where I was like, what round are we in? Because it was just going by, you know, and I was like, holy shit, what round are we in? You know, and Brett was sitting there, Akimoto, and you know, I was like, Brett, like, look at what round it is, because me and Dewey couldn't see the screen, you know, so that was different, but, you know, for the most part, man, you know, I haven't been able to go back and watch really anything other than the highlight of the knockout, and you know, I seen that the overhand that he threw that kind of turned into an elbow that Tyson Fury hit Francis in the forehead with. There was a moment that I would love to see in There was a time when Tyson and Francis were right in front of us and there was a good exchange there. And I swear Francis caught him with like that same kind of uppercut he caught Kane with. And Tyson kind of buckled into the rope. And I felt like the rope saved a knockdown. I'd love to go back and see that again in replay because it happened so fast right in front of us. But when I saw Tyson's eyes, he looked like he was pretty glossed over. And I felt like, you know, Francis caught him with another one.
Do you remember what round that was in by any chance?
Seven or eight.
I'll have to go back and look because I want to rewatch it before spinning back click and junkie radio.
Yeah, check it out because it was really literally right in front of our corner. It was literally right in front of our corner. But
I stuck around post-fight to hear what they had to say because it was the zone over here in Peru where I'm at. Ghost probably watched it on ESPN+. So maybe he had other... you know, announcers, but here was a big contingent of boxers. Eric, let me tell you something, man. They were amazed at Ngannou. They said Ngannou was the winner of the night. They said the rounds were close, but they were really almost, I think they even used the word embarrassed and ashamed. Like it seemed like boxing as a community were like, wow, you know, like we just got punked, you know, like that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Did you feel any of that as well, you know, from the boxing side? Like, oh, you know, like a rough night for us. Anything like that post-fight?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you kind of did, but, you know, no one gave us a chance. I mean, really, no one. You know, so I'm kind of immune to it by now. I mean, I've had literally 4 or 5 months of people saying we can't beat Izzy, we can't beat this guy. We can't, you know, just so you just kind of become immune to it. But I will say this, the one guy that really did give us a chance, and man, like, it was crazy what he said to us in the pre-fight lead up was Tim Bradley. And he was speaking to the group, the coaches and Francis, and he goes, I was debating on telling you this, but I had a dream that you dropped Tyson Fury with a left hook. And he said that pre-fight. He said that in the pre-fight like meeting. And he goes, I not only give you a chance, but I think you can win this fight. And this is, bro, we were blown away. He was really the only one that, like, out of that community, I felt was giving us a legitimate chance to win. And I don't know if he put it in the universe or whatever, but he said, my wife told me not to tell you this, but now that I got you in front of me, I feel like I have to. He goes, I had a dream that you dropped him with the left hook. And so that the moment we saw him after the fight, man, we were like, dude, you called it. You called it, man. And he said, he was very gracious to Dewey and myself and the team. And, you know, he said, man, you guys not only shocked the world, but, you know, you guys outboxed him. He goes, you guys outboxed him, man. And, you know, gave all the credit to Francis and deservedly so, man. It was pretty cool that he was really the only one that I saw, you know, that gave him a fighting chance.
You know, that's such a difficult way to look at things from the boxers from their perspective, because the first thing they're going to want to point to is they're going to say, well, we underestimated him. And right. I didn't see that. You know what I saw the whole fight? And I told George this because we were connecting through FaceTime. I said, he looks confused that every time Francis changes stances, where the punches are coming from, the way he's standing, all of that seems to be getting to him. You could see Tyson Fury kind of going, wow, this doesn't make sense to me how this guy is hitting me from these angles. And that was what I felt going into the fight was his biggest weapon was, you got to kind of be a little bit of the MMA guy in this fight. Don't be the boxer, because that's not what 100%. He's used to. And I felt like that played out. And I think Francis deserves a lot of credit on his own in regards to his management of his stamina. You know, like, that is so hard to do. MMA and boxing, there are different things that tire you out. And being able to know how to manage all that, like, I just feel like Francis Ngannou had a tremendous night. I think you guys played a huge role in it, the way you prepared him. I think he just used every advantage he had to his at his disposal. He used it all. And I think Tyson Fury was just very confused. But at the same time, I don't think he expected to get hit that hard. I don't think he expected to get hit that much. I feel like it was more on Francis than it was on Tyson not being prepared or any of that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you nailed it. I feel like we had more wrinkles in our game. Like we, there was a lot of things that we wanted to show and do. And, you know, the southpaw thing was something that we thought was going to be really, really good for us. You know, Francis was lacing that left hand all during training camp and all during training camp. And, you know, when you hold pads for Francis and we tell him all the time, his left cross out of southpaw is probably more accurate and faster than his right cross out of orthodox. And I think that maybe because that's traditionally his jab hand, but it's now on the rear side. But this thing comes out, it goes fast, and it's very accurate. So once we started having success out of southpaw, not only were we having success, but we also saw Tyson Fury looking a little bit more confused on how to approach it and how to attack it. That was something we talked to him about in the corner. We said, hey, man, if you feel comfortable there, if you feel like your defense is sound out of southpaw, let's stay in southpaw, but let's use it to start adding on our reloads so that, like, he would throw the left hand and then gallop and reload to the overhand or reload just in something, again, off the rear side, and then possibly throw in the left cross into a stance switch into our orthodox right overhand. He tried that but got smothered. Those are some of the things that we thought would actually work really, really well was our step overs and going from one stance to the other. And he tried a little bit of that. And I think, you know, that was some of the things that we'll have to get better at with experience. But yeah, man, I certainly feel like he had a lot more wrinkles in his game, Francis. I felt like he was able to show some different things that were very confusing. Definitely the Superman punch, I think, caught all of them off guard. Man, it was so cool because, you know, that was something that him and Dewey have been working on for a while. So we end the night with that, like in the warm-up, we end the night with the Superman punch and Israel Adesanya's in the back. And Izzy sees – well, first he sees him hitting southpaw, and Izzy's like, oh, my God, like, I didn't know Francis is this good out of southpaw. I'm like, yeah, man, he can crack out of southpaw. And then Dewey's like, Izzy, we got to check this one. Last one. And Francis hits a lead uppercut and a Superman punch. And Izzy grabs all the pillows off the couch, starts throwing the pillows. And he's like, holy shit, you guys got to do that. You guys got to land that. Like, it was kind of a cool ending to the warm-up. You know, just the enthusiasm and just how ecstatic Izzy was to see, you know, as his buddy execute the Superman punch. He's like, you got to throw that. That is the shit. Like, you know, get him up to the barrier. And that was the kind of last piece of our little bit of warm up. So, yeah, man, I think there was a lot of things that we were able to show and do that were more predicated to the MMA side of things that, you know, most boxers might not be accustomed to. But when he threw the Superman punch, Tyson Fury's corner was going ape shit. They were so pissed. They're like, that's not legal. And the ref goes, it was legal. His foot's still on the ground. He didn't leave his feet. So, yeah. So we you know, Francis wanted to wait till he can kind of get him in that barrier. And you know, it didn't land per se, but it was definitely a cool technique that I think that, you know, caught him off guard.
Last two for me, Eric. I'm going to need you to pull out a crystal ball for these two, though. First question, do you feel like these guys will ever fight again before Francis' career is over?
I think they have to, you know. I think I really do. I think they have to. After that performance, you know, how can you not, man? And, you know, in the ring, like, you know, John Fury, you know, the whole team, the whole Tyson Fury team was just so nice and so gracious. And, you know, let's not get it twisted, man. Like, they provided us a great opportunity. You know, we needed two to tango, and Tyson kind of gifted that opportunity. And I felt like they kind of thought that they were doing us the favor, but, you know, we were trying to spoil that. And, you know, I think being the competitor that Tyson Fury is, I'm sure he doesn't want to not give that opportunity, or he definitely wants to take it. Maybe I would say he didn't take it seriously. I feel like he did. I think he took the fight seriously. But I don't think he expected some of the things that Francis is able to do in the fight and accomplish. So he probably wants to get that back and try to show that, you know, he's a much better boxer. So I definitely think that these guys will fight again.
Ghost, before you ask your next one, let me just say two quick things.
Okay.
One, going back to the Superman punch, the announcers went nuts. When you see it on TV, they loved it. And nice. The other one that I was going to say right now was, I just forgot, so back to Ghost.
Francis Ngannou, you know, what's made this whole process so beautiful is he controls his own destiny. He holds all of his cards. And so, obviously, you know, you look at John Jones and Stipe Miocic and what happened, right? That could have very well been Francis versus John Jones, and now that fight would have been gone, right? So I guess my question is this. Now that this is all kind of played out, do you feel like Francis, at any point, man, if it's his last fight or whatever, do you think he'll ever, I know he's with the PFL, but do you think he would ever don those UFC gloves ever again in his career?
I don't know. I would like to say yes, just to be, you know, optimistic with that. I just don't know how much damage like the relationships are there. I would like to think that, you know, Dana, Hunter, Francis, the powers that be would be able to set any of that aside to make the best fights possible as long as, you know, the circumstances were met. But I would hate to say never, you know. I just don't believe in saying that. And I'm hopefully optimistic that there's an opportunity that we can go and compete against, you know, the guys that I feel that are the best in the world. And, you know, John Jones, Tom Aspinall, Sergey Pavlich, and these guys that are up and coming fighters. And, you know, maybe even more with Stipe, get that trilogy.
Hey, you know what? I do want to say one last thing. I know that the UFC has their side and everybody else has another side. But for this one day, can we all just be happy, like MMA and what was done that night? I think everyone should just put everything aside and just be happy, because I don't know that we will ever see anything like this in our lifetimes ever again. And you were front row for this, Eric. That's amazing.
Yeah, man, it's pretty cool. And, you know, to be able to tell, you know, my grandkids about this experience and this moment is very surreal. You know, and you know, I got a lot of text messages from the guys in the UFC, you know, and they were all very proud of Francis as well. And I think that, you know, we could put that aside. And we said this before, like, success is infinite. There's enough to go around for everybody. And we can all be happy for each other's successes. And, you know, that's what I pray for, man. I just hope that, you know, we can all make money, we can all be successful, and we can all, you know, push one another and into greatness, you know. And I think that's what we have in front of us right now is, you know, one of the best athletes on the planet when it comes to combat sports, and that's Francis Ngannou. And you know, I'm just glad that he's getting the flowers that he deserves. You know, people hated on him, people told him he fumbled the bag, he did this, he did that, he did this, but man, I said that to him going into round 10. I just said, bro, this is your destiny, man. And, you know, it's just an honor to be by your side and watching this all unfold. And, you know, whatever he decides to do and wherever this path takes him, he's going to be incredible at it.
Eric, people are going to wonder, was it UFC athletes that texted you or UFC executives that texted you?
I'll just say just all of the above, all of the above. You know, it was nothing but love. So, you know, people were very happy, I think, for him and his accomplishments and, you know, the team. And, you know, he's been through a lot. He's been through a lot in the last couple of years with this, not only with the contract disputes and the knee injury and, you know, all of it, all of the above. I think there's a lot of hope in you know, just him being successful, you know, and I felt that it was cool to be a part of. And, you know, how can you not love the guy? You know, how can you not love the guy and what he does and in the game? So he's rewritten the rule book, if you ask me.
Yeah. Well, going back to what Ghost says, then that makes us happy to hear that even from that side, they were happy for Francis. They were happy for MMA. They were happy for your team. That's awesome. I want to be respectful of your time. We've taken up 35 minutes, but I still have a few more questions. You tell me, can you still go or do you need to, huh?
I got nowhere to go.
Oh, you got nowhere to go. Oh, holy cow.
Cristiano Ronaldo's not waiting anywhere. Anybody? Nah.
Eminem, they don't want to go to the club or nothing.
And if he was, I wouldn't give my time away from you guys, man. You guys are my number one, so I'm here for you.
Thank you. Did you meet Cristiano Ronaldo by any chance, or Eminem, either one?
No, they were all at the banquet, but you know, you just imagine all the hoopla and everybody around him, and you know,
right,
circling him and stuff. But I got to meet my guy Lennon Clueless. That made my day. I almost had tears in my eyes when he came up and said hello. I was like, no way, Lennox freaking Lewis. Yeah, that was cool. Randy and I were standing there talking, and then he came up and just shook my hand. He's like, man, huge fan. You know, and I was like, what? I looked over at Randy like, holy shit, dude, it's Lennox Lewis. So it was cool.
That's awesome, brother. So he's a fan. He's seen you like in Strickland's corner or Francis's corner. Like he's followed your MMA career.
I think so. Like his manager came up and introduced us. So he just said, "Hey, I wanted to introduce you to somebody. This is." And I like look over. I'm like, it's Lennox Lewis, and Randy and I were sitting there. Randy and I were just having a conversation. So it was cool. Like, you know, come over and say hello. And yeah, he said, man, huge fan. Next time, you know, you guys get a boxing match lined up, I'd love to be involved. Love to come in and help you guys out. Mm. And I was like, man, that would be a freaking honor. It'd be a freaking honor. So yeah, it was cool to even, you know, shake his hand.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions was there anyone that you might have been starstruck by from the boxing world? You just answered that. If there's someone else, go ahead and share. But then let me just pivot to my next question. Izzy, great friend of Francis Ngannou, but you were on the opposite side about a month ago. Did you guys discuss that fight at all? Did you guys talk about it? You know, was it awkward, pleasant, or was there anything?
Oh man, it was very pleasant actually. We didn't really talk about the fight, but dude, it was all love and all respect, and you know, that was really it. Like, he came over and gave me a big old hug, and we were both there for the right reasons. We were both there for Francis, and obviously we competed against each other last month, but you know, I had nothing but love and respect for him and his team. He knows that, and you know, that's the fight game. And then I kind of had a funny moment because, like, there's a bunch of cameras on us when we were talking, and then, like, Izzy's just great. He sticks out his hand, like, grabs my hand all, like, serious and shaking my hands, like, "Hello, Eric. Good to see you again. How was everything? How's Sean?" You know, just making it kind of this funny, awkward moment. And then, yeah, man, we didn't chat too much about the fight, but just kind of about, like, just his future you know, how he mentioned he was going to take a little bit of time off, but he's like, "Yeah, I'm not really like retiring. I think I just said I was going to take some time off," and they kind of spun it a certain direction. You know, but we didn't talk any X's and O's or anything like that. And I'll tell you what, man, like, I was so happy that he was there because of his energy. He really owned the room, and like, he exuded like gratitude, and like, he made the room environment a lot more fun, enthusiastic, and like, it just, heart was in the right place. He traveled a long way to be there for Francis, man, and I thought that was pretty cool that he took the time to do so.
What impressed you the most about Saudi Arabia? Maybe non-fighting. Was there just any, like, "Oh my God, I've never seen that many Lamborghinis," or, you know, I don't know, are the hotel structures, anything about them? Like, I don't know, outside the box.
Yeah, definitely the architecture, for sure. Like, the labor laws, I'm curious about that, because next door to me, they've been building this freaking hotel for 24/7. They haven't stopped at all. Like, they're just building this thing. I was like, I feel like they're trying to build this hotel before I leave, you know, in a 13-day span, they've just been building. But yeah, like, they're erecting these freaking arenas in like 2 months span. Like, the arena that we fought in, I heard, was like, it was done in 3 months, you know. It was crazy. So yeah, that definitely stands out to me. But you know, dude, they took care of us. Like, we have the entire fifth floor of this, the Fairmont out here. I mean, it's just this beautiful room, beautiful hotel. They have the entire 23rd floor for Francis and his entire family. I think we have like 30 rooms in total. All of our flights, like, I'm flying home tomorrow, business class, you know, this is all on the promotion. This is all on their dime. So, I mean, they really rolled out the red carpet for us and took good care of everybody involved. So couldn't be more happy.
You were gone a long time for Australia. You come home, and then now you were gone a long time here. But I saw a nice tweet from your wife, Annie. She was into it. You know, what would you say to your family, man? They're letting you live out your dream, and I think that's pretty cool. And I'm not trying to make you cry, but still, I just feel like, wow, that's quite a commitment, man. Like, seriously, you've just been gone a lot, you know what I mean? But yeah. It just seems like they're always your biggest fans, and they're the happiest, regardless of the time away.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, none of this is possible without them. And, you know, I know how much extra added weight it puts on my wife. You know, she runs the house as it is, even when I'm home. But you know, I'm able to kind of take some of that relief off of her, pickups and things of that sort. So when you're on the road this long, and especially during a crazy time in the world with everything going on in Israel, you know, I think that added a lot more stress to not only my mom, but my wife and my family and everybody else. Just, you know, are you safe? Is this what's going on? So that's another added element to everything. And, you know, you nailed it. You nailed it, George. Like, I'm in this position really because of my wife. Like, she, without her, I don't have this opportunity. And not only is she my biggest fan, but she's my biggest driving force, you know? So, the wins and losses, you know, those things come and go, but she's definitely, the rock behind everything that involves Eric Nixick, that's for sure.
Before we let you go, is there anything that you had hoped to discuss here, maybe that we just somehow avoided, that you wanted to say? Just because I imagine your mind must have been blown away these last few weeks by the event itself, by how much they invested in this event, and again, all those boxers. I had an interaction once with Roberto Duran where I was speechless. Luckily, Goz and Stitch were there to make the introduction. But like I say, the floor is yours if you want to say anything here before we wrap up.
No, I'm just so happy for the entire team, to be honest with you. You know, it goes layers deeper with Markel and Randy, Andrew, everybody involved, the logistics behind this thing, you know. And I was sitting with Markel having lunch, and he was showing me his notes from like 4 years ago and just kind of how he architected this whole thing. And it was like 4 pages of just notes, and literally like 2/3 of those things like came to fruition. You know, so there's just so many layers and levels behind this whole thing that I think get overlooked. And then, you know, man, I want to just give my flowers to Dewey, man. Like, you know, I feel bad in a lot of ways because, you know, Francis and I are always going to be attached, right? Like, but this one, we sat down in July, and I said in a meeting, I said, when we all met, I said, I think you make Dewey your head boxing coach, man. Like, this guy's quite capable of doing it. And not only do I think he's quite capable, I think you're able to succeed with him in this role. And he lived up to all those expectations, man. So and he's my bro. Like, I love the guy to death. We've been together for a long, long time. We've won a lot of fights together. And, I just hope that the people really understand what I saw from him, you know, the workload that he put on his shoulders, from traveling. You know, he traveled one day to cut weight with Bubba Jenkins, traveled back to be at a practice, you know, for Francis, and then traveled back to Texas the next day to corner. Like, this guy was just all over the place, just making sure that he was there for all of his athletes. And as a fellow coach, man, you see that hard work and that effort that you put in there, and it's only inspiring. So, you know, I just hope that the MMA community, the boxing community, and everyone involved just really understands how much work Dewey put into this camp and the love that we all have for him. And, you know, he was extra special this time around, man, and I'm just proud to call him my friend.
And we are proud to call you our friend, and thank you for the time today. Go get some sleep. although you are flying business class, so who knows, you might have a more comfortable bed than us on your flight home.
I didn't know that, like, Saudi Arabia is a completely dry country. Like, there's no old fashions, you can't grab a beer, there's none of that here. So the moment I land in Heathrow, I'm gonna turn it up a notch, boys. So it's gonna be fun.
Centurion Lounge or one of those, right?
Oh yeah, it's game on. I'm gonna have some old fashions, one or 12.
That's what's up. All right, Eric. Well, we'll see you soon in Vegas. Safe travels. Congrats again to you and the teams and Big Fran as well. Please tell him we said congrats on that performance, and we'll see you soon.
Will do. Love you guys, man. Good to talk to you.
You too, buddy. Take care.
Well, apologies for those of you that wanted the show about an hour long, because that alone went about 40 minutes. So, but man, that was a lot of information there.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff there. I mean, that dude, him and I are relatively the same age, and I know a lot of my childhood was spent watching Mike Tyson fight for about a minute and 35 seconds at a time. And when he wasn't fighting, I was trying to beat him up and punch out. So for him to even be, you know, a part of the same camp as Mike Tyson, and to be around people like Cristiano Ronaldo and Eminem and Roberto Duran, all these great fighters, The Undertaker, Vince McMahon, like, you got to remember, about a month ago, this dude was part of putting a belt around Sean Strickland. Like, right now, Eric Nixick is on cloud 9.
He's arguably the coach of the year.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, I know this was boxing, folks. I get it. But he's had a good year.
Mm-hmm.
The Strickland win alone puts him in the running. And then, obviously, some of it's a popularity contest. But he was in the corner with Rayfion Stotts against Patchy Mix, another Extreme Couture guy. They just kind of divided the coaches. So someone had to win and someone had to lose. But, you know, you get to a final, that's still pretty impressive, right?
Yeah.
And he, you know, he was in Manel Kopp's corner in Australia as well. And he's obviously getting close to a title shot himself. So, yeah, man, no, props to him. He's doing a lot, and we're very gracious of him to give us 40 to 45 minutes of his time, and hopefully you guys enjoyed that.
So just to finish up here, let's go back to John Jones versus Stipe Miocic. We covered this on Thursday. For those that haven't heard, John Jones tore his pectoral. He's out for 8 months. He did not have to relinquish the title, vacate the title, whatever. He's still the undisputed champion for the UFC. However, what the UFC is doing now is they're doing an interim title fight with Tom Aspinall and Sergey Pavlovich. The winner does not get a direct title shot versus John Jones. That's usually how it is. Usually your interim and your undisputed unify. But in this case, Dana White has already come out after the power slap event and said that Stipe Miocic will get the shot when John Jones is ready. Now, of course, part of me rolls my eyes and says, well, the interim's supposed to unify. That's what you've said in the past, and that's kind of how it works. But he did say one thing. Hey, man, this is a special situation. The heavyweight GOAT against the light heavyweight GOAT. I really want to see it. I get it that it's probably a bigger fight than the other one anyway, even though those other two young lions are studs. But it, you know, like I say, it's just part of the whole UFC's inconsistency of just kind of doing what they want that will always bug me. Sorry, if you don't like it, you know, maybe this isn't the show for you, but we just call it out like we see it. But at least he explained it, and at least he put it into some context where I could just go, all right, I get it, you know. But what did you think, you know? And by the way, we also have a comment from Stipe Miocic. He went on his OnlyFans and said that he was never even offered the position, you know, because that's what we wondered. That's how we got the Dana White's answer. We said, well, was Stipe ever asked? And he said, no, I didn't want to insult Stipe by asking him for that. He's too great of a fighter to really be fighting for an interim title. But Stipe didn't sound like he would have been, like he would have automatically turned it down either.
Stipe made it sound like he would have at least considered it.
Right.
And so that's what makes that comment so stupid, is why wouldn't you at least pick up the phone and just ask them, unless that's not what you want. And we all get it. What you really want is the big fight with John Jones. And that's fine. I get it. It's not common to us. That's not how sports works in America. So a lot of us are going to have problems with that. But in this particular case, I kind of get it. But what I don't know if they realize what they're doing is, again, this is just another case of them diminishing their own belt. Their belt is supposed to be the biggest goal in their sport, the biggest achievement. Fighters no longer want to fight for that. It doesn't mean anything to them. It's just about money and whatever wins you the most money. And that's a problem in sports. You know, when the 49ers say, we'd rather just face the Cowboys again in the NFC Championship. You know, we're not trying to face Denver on the other side, or whoever the hell is on the other side. Well, probably not Denver this year, but you know what I mean? Like, you want that Super Bowl ring. That's what people, when they put it on your finger, they're crying about getting it. Stipe Miocic was talking about how he wants his belt back. And that's one more step to doing that. You know, who cares if it didn't go through John Jones? It didn't go through John Jones, but you get your belt back, and that's what's supposed to mean the most to these fighters. And it's not like that. The new belts are John Jones, Conor McGregor, fighters like that. Like, that's what they want. It's not the belt anymore, and that part kind of sucks.
Dana White has often said to fighters that turn down fights, be careful, because sometimes things don't work out. You know, you sitting around and waiting and passing fights up. He said that many times over the past 20 years, 20 plus years we're at now. And I'm going to say this, be careful, Dana. I'm not going to steal what Brendan Schaub said word for word. I'm just going to say stuff does happen. That's a serious injury. And Schaub says he knows a lot of pro athletes that haven't done it in 8 months. It might take a little longer. So, you know, you're really kind of, how can I say, you're freezing your marquee division for maybe longer than you should. And honestly, he should really start preparing for the next era, you know, and stop kind of clutching at the pearls and just riding out this John Jones or Miocic wave. I think the reason he's doing it, that, by the way, goes, is because it was a bad look for Francis to leave. And that's why he was all over John Jones. He's the baddest man on the planet. He just won the title. You know, of course he's the GOAT in our sport. I'll acknowledge that. Baddest man on the planet, though? I don't know. No one beat Ngannou. He vacated the title. I kind of still have Ngannou with that. Now, as the time went on, because remember, Ngannou hadn't fought in 22 months, I think. Almost 2 years. As that goes and you don't fight, yeah, we can't anoint you. I mean, we can't keep anointing you as the baddest man on the planet. You had to do something. But he did something on Saturday night, which was pretty epic. So I think, if anything, he kind of solidified that. Anyways, I just think it has something to do with that. He just wants John Jones to be known as his baddest man on the planet. And that's why he didn't want to take it. Because all the other times he's raced and said, oh, my God, Jiří Procházka hurt his shoulder. It's the worst. I asked three doctors, and it's the worst I've ever seen, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you know, it was so dramatic. And in this case, it's John Jones tore his pec. He's coming back in 8 months. And in the meantime, we got, you know what I mean? It was just a whole different pitch that we got from him.
Right. It's a silly situation when you think about it. For me, Francis Ngannou never stopped being the baddest man on the planet. And the fact that he just did what he did just solidified it even more. But if you want an easier way of determining this, I don't know. Do you think John Jones would have done what, you know, do you think he could have fought Tyson Fury like that?
I don't think so, no, because he can't kick. His game is mostly based off kicking.
Right.
So I don't think he would have done well against Tyson Fury. And I know Stipe Miocic, he also has boxing skills, kind of probably on the level of Ngannou. Probably doesn't pack the power of Ngannou, but he might be cleaner than Ngannou. I just don't know how many hours each guy has spent, but I know that he did the Golden Gloves and took a whole year off after wrestling, you know, or something like that, to just focus on boxing. And obviously he's a hard hitter. But again, for the UFC, if Jones is at the top, it's hard to argue with his resume. They can actually look people in the eye and go, we got the baddest man on the planet. I think it's important to him to them to say that. And if Miocic beats John Jones, then they're still safe, because Miocic is 1-1 against Ngannou. So, but I think that whole thing bothered Dana. I bet you Saturday night, last night, also bothered Dana. And, you know, I'll be interested to hear what he's asked the next time he does media and how he responds to it. If he'll shit on him or give him props, you know. Eric Nixick wouldn't give any names. But he did say some suits and some fighters all had nice, respectful things to say. And so I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. The only other thing to report is Khamzat Chimaev does not have a broken hand. What he has actually is a torn ligament in his hand. Supposedly he's going to have a cast on for about a month, and then they're going to reevaluate it. So the only thing that does is kind of delay what might be the next fight for Sean Strickland, because this was supposed to be a title eliminator, although Khamzat didn't look necessarily great in it. Arguments were made for it to be a draw, or maybe for Kamaru Usman to have won that fight, but Khamzat did win it. But you look at his middleweight resume and it's not really that flashy. He doesn't even have a top five win, to be honest. And he hadn't fought there and cleanly, you know, fought a 185-pound fight in 3 years. Because remember, the Holland fight was at a catchweight at 180. It's technically still a middleweight fight, but that wasn't the intention when they signed. He was supposed to fight Nate Diaz at 170. So anyway, Strickland's been adamant about it shouldn't be him, but if we got to do it, we'll do it, but it shouldn't be him. And there's rumors of with UFC doing a deal in Saudi Arabia themselves that might be the spot for Chimaev. In fact, there's reports that Chimaev can't even get into the country. He can't even get into the United States because of everything that's happening with Russia and Ukraine. So that might be the only part of the world that he can fight for right now is the Middle East. And from what I'm hearing, he may have even moved from Sweden, or at least established a residency somewhere in the Middle East. I'm not sure if it's in Dubai, Abu Dhabi, which is part of the UAE, or if it's in Saudi Arabia, but that's something that I was hearing when I was perusing through Twitter and YouTube. And that was according to his manager and coach, by the way. So not just grabbing it out of my ass. But anyway, I think that's a lot for today. I can't say enough about the fight. There was a long delay in between the fights, and that kind of sucked. But once they got going, pretty cool. Did I need a whole mini concert before? Not really, but it was the first show. I guess they were trying shit. Remember when Triller did a bunch of stuff, goes? Arm wrestling and music and
Justin Bieber.
Yeah, that was kind of a lot too, but they were trying stuff. So we'll see. I do think Vegas can replicate it. We can match them with stars and athletes. I just think that over there, I think here you get your ticket and maybe your suite and that's kind of it. And I think over there they were spoiled in a different, more elegant way. But I still think Vegas can possibly match that. It's just going to cost a lot of money, so you have to sell a lot of tickets. But I'd be anxious for something like that to go down in Sin City. But anyway, we'll talk about that another day. Don't forget to catch our show, Spinning Backlick. It's live every Monday at noon Eastern. So even if you, by the time you download this show, Monday's already passed, you can go to your YouTube page, youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo, and just get it right away. Because we, as soon as it's over, it's available on the on that page. But if you are able to listen at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, then at least when you get it now, make the adjustment for the following week and check it out. Myself and Goes and a couple of our colleagues, we break down the latest news, the big stories in the sport of mixed martial arts or boxing. And I think you guys will like it because I get a lot of positive feedback about it. So I can pretty much get that guarantee out that it'll be worth your hour. Anyway, folks, we're out of here. We'll talk to you on Thursday. Go out and be a champion. Take care.